So a few months ago, I said that I was going to reboot this podcast, and in spite of my best intentions, it's gone 2 months without an episode. But let's see if that changes. Last time, I was talking about classical republicanism. I like to talk about republicanism. I love the Romans and the form of government they built, really just kind of the mindset that goes into this ideal republic. And I was reminded of this very recently when I was reading an article in the Washington Post about Jimmy Carter. This article is called The Uncelebrity President. And it really is interesting. It's fascinating because the reporter goes to Plains, Georgia, where Jimmy Carter still lives in the house that he owned before he was ever president. This house is valued at less than $200,000, which, you know, it was noting that there are armored vehicles out front that cost more than the actual house, armored vehicles belonging to the Secret Service agents. He's got about three agents that follow him around. But Jimmy Carter is living in this small Georgia town where he grew up, married to the same woman that he's been married to for 72 years, and doesn't live a very lavish lifestyle. Certainly comfortable. The man's not in poverty or anything like that. He's sold plenty of books, but one thing that distinguishes Jimmy Carter from other recent presidents is that he doesn't give paid speeches. Now, the American presidency, especially in recent years, this has been something that either someone already has money and they get into it that way. Certainly now we have the wealthiest president we've ever had. Before that, George Washington had been the wealthiest president, but plenty of wealthy people have occupied the White House. The Bushes, for example, already very wealthy before they got there. But those people who are not wealthy before they get into the White House become wealthy very, very quickly after leaving it. The Clintons, the Obamas, both of these families have amassed a great deal of wealth, a lot of it from making speeches at $100,000, or actually in a lot of cases, several hundred thousand dollars a pop. If you have been a president of the United States, you can go give one speech and maybe pull in $400,000. And you're thinking, okay, Jimmy Carter, like, you realize you can do this. According to this article, when Jimmy Carter left office, his peanut farming business had been in a blind trust, and they let him know, oh, well, by the way, this business is $1 million in debt. He had to sell this business. He's made a bit of an income from writing books. I actually have a colleague, Carlton King, who reads all of his books and, you know, just loves Jimmy Carter books. So, I mean, he's financing Jimmy Carter's retirement, but then this guy hasn't gone and bought a bigger house. Jimmy Carter said that it had never been his ambition to be rich. He said he doesn't blame other people for doing it, for making speeches and all of that kind of stuff. Now, this is something that this was a precedent, of course, a precedent set by former presidents. This is a precedent set by Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford was the first president to capitalize on his presidency. And ever since then, no president has ever had to worry about being anything less than rich after their presidency is over. But again, this guy is just living in this small Georgia town in his small ranch-style house, and he seems very unlike our American presidents. And he was very unlike Roman politicians in the heyday of the late Roman Republic, early Roman Empire. But that didn't stop the Roman historian Livy from looking back. In Livy's History of Rome, he goes back to the very beginning. And his idea was that Rome had become, you know, much like the United States, a very wealthy and a very powerful country. But Livy felt like when he looked back at the history of Rome, that Rome had lost something, that Rome had lost some of this Republican virtue that had really been part of its foundation. And when Livy was writing history, and this is something I'll get into later on as well, because it's something that I want to tackle and I think is one of the biggest pitfalls of history today, that history is not just a cautionary tale that keeps us from repeating the mistakes of the past, so to speak. That history is heroic. History should be inspiring us to do something greater than what we would do without it. And so Livy, one of these examples Livy goes back to, is the example of Publius Valerius, who was one of the first Roman consuls after the overthrow of the monarchy. The monarchy was overthrown by Lucius Junius Brutus. And when the monarch was, you know, when the king was run out of town, Tarquin the Proud, then Brutus says, even though the oracle at Delphi had ordained that he would be the next king in Rome, Brutus swore that there will never be another king in Rome. And instead, the Romans founded the Republic, the Commonwealth, the common property, Res Publica. And instead of having a king, they would have two consuls. And these two consuls, kind of imagine two presidents. They would serve one-year terms, and then they would rotate out of office. Now, some people served as consul more than once, but in the early Roman Republic, you didn't serve as consul two consecutive times. So the idea here was that somebody steps up and becomes the leader, and then that person goes back to what they're doing. There's the story of Cincinnatus, who was made a dictator. This was an emergency office for a short period of time. And Cincinnatus, it was said that when they came to offer him the dictatorship, he was out plowing his fields. He had to put on some nicer clothes to meet this delegation from the Roman Senate. And then, after 16 days, he did what he was supposed to do, and then he went back to plowing his fields. This was the model for leadership. Now, when Lucius Junius Brutus overthrew the monarchy, he was one of the first consuls. The other consul was Publius Valerius. And when Brutus was killed in battle, Valerius then becomes the consul. He's the only surviving consul. And of course, people start thinking, they're suspicious. They think, okay, well, when is there going to be another election for another consul? Is this guy trying to make himself the king? It came to everyone's attention. Isn't Valerius building a house up there on that hill? And they're eyeing this house and they're thinking that Valerius is trying to set himself up as a king. This is going to become a fortress, a palace. This is going to be, this is going to be the center of his power. And it created a great deal of distrust. And Valerius gets wind of this. And he says, look, everybody, let's get together here. All right. So he summons all of the people in Rome. Rome was just a town at this time. All right. Just a single city and not anything to phone home about. And he convenes the entire population. And as he's in front of the citizens, he tells his lictors, his bodyguards, to lower the fasces being this symbol of Roman power, this bundle of sticks that represented the strength of the united Roman people, that also, besides these rods, it had an axe in there that symbolizes the power of life and death. This symbol went back to the Roman kings, to the Etruscans even before that, and it was also put to use by the consuls. But Valerius tells his lictors, he says, lower the fasces, kind of like we would lower a flag when the color guard, you know, lowers the other flags in front of the United States flag. He says, lower the fasces as a symbolic gesture to the people that they're the ones who were in charge, that this is not about him. He is a public servant. He's not someone who is trying to do this for himself. And so Valerius tells everyone, first of all, he says, I hear that this house is creating suspicions. And so because of that, he orders that the house be torn down. That if this house was going to cause friction between him and the people that he was supposed to serve, he was not going to build that house. So he did this to gain the public trust. Now, then he's not finished. He goes farther. He says, Roman citizens will be exempt from shameful forms of punishment. Things like crucifixion. These things were reserved for not only atrocious criminals, but people who were not Roman citizens. A Roman citizen could not be crucified or shamefully put to death. There's the story of St. Peter and St. Paul when, according to Christian tradition, they were martyred on the same day. St. Peter crucified upside down, whereas St. Paul was beheaded. St. Paul was a Roman citizen. Roman citizens cannot be punished shamefully, no matter what they've done. Now, the second thing is something that rears its head again on the Ides of March, 44 BC, when Valerius says that any Roman attempting to reestablish the monarchy will be executed, and possibly even without trial. Someone who is a threat to the Roman Republic, somebody who is going to bring it down, someone who is going to destroy this government that the Romans have built. There is no place for them here. And this really shows the humility, really the servant leadership of one of the first Roman consuls. And the people were so pleased with Publius Valerius that they gave him a cognomen. A cognomen was a name that could be bestowed upon somebody. Romans typically didn't call each other by their first names. They would call each other by descriptors. And this cognomen, this name afterwards that he's going to be known as, that's going to be a personal trait, is Publicola, the people's friend. Now, that sounds like some sort of government-manufactured soft drink, but it's nice to be called something like that, that they call him Publius Valerius Publicola, the people's friend. Now, the thing is, the name Publius may sound familiar to some of you who are into history and politics, and there's a reason for that, because we need to think about, okay, well, Publicola got this name because people were suspicious about him, and he did something to address those suspicions, to get rid of those suspicions. Now, as much as Americans love the Constitution today, it's almost blasphemy to say that there's something wrong with the Constitution, because, you know, even though, I mean, we've seen a lot of working governments that have come into effect more recently, possibly there are better systems of government out there, but our system of government, our Constitution, it's sacred to Americans. But it wasn't always that way. When the Constitution was first proposed out of this secret meeting of elites who suddenly come out and say, hey, we've got this new Constitution that's going to create a stronger central government, the anti-federalist said, No, this is going to create an aristocratic monarchy. It's not going to be a republic. It is going to destroy the rights of the people and the states. These anti-federalists, such as Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death, they came up with all of these objections, and it really looked like that Virginia and New York, two of the largest states, were not going to ratify the Constitution. And what they said here was that the Constitution is neither federal nor republican in nature, and it will create this oppressive government. Now, at the time, it was characteristic for people who were writing political essays. You think about Twitter culture and stuff like that. A lot of people who have these political accounts, they're anonymous accounts, or, you know, when people say things, a lot of times it's easier to be anonymous and not put yourself out there. Well, When James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and John Jay got together, and they said that we need to answer these anti-Federalist objections. Now, the Federalist Papers, these essays that they were going to get together and write, these are, of course, classics. They are very organized. These guys knew what they were going to do. They were more organized than the anti-Federalists, but they didn't strike first. The anti-Federalists had already written several essays. And so as they're preparing to write the Federalist Papers, they're thinking, what is going to be our creative pseudonym here? We need to come up with a cool Greek or Roman name so that we can answer these writers such as Brutus, okay? So this anti-Federalist writer, Brutus, he's taking this name thinking, hey, this is the name we associate with overthrowing kings and killing Caesar and getting rid of threats to republicanism. So how are we going to answer Brutus and Cato and all of these other people who are writing? And they decided on the pseudonym Publius, after Publius Valerius Publicola. And this is something that, you know, ended up being quite successful. The Constitution is not threatening you. The Constitution is your friend. And we live in a time today where there really is, in a lot of circles, a lack of trust in government, which really, when one party's in power right now because of political polarization, anybody who supports the other party really has a natural inclination not to trust the government. I think it's a very slim majority of Americans in a recent poll said that they trust our elections. There is a serious lack of trust in government right now, just as there was then. And, you know, perhaps people can say what they want about Jimmy Carter's presidency, but his ex-presidency has been such an example of what the presidency was conceived to be as a Republican institution, and how this person is really, ideally, supposed to go back into society. Jimmy Carter, who flies commercial, who took selfies with people on a plane recently, whose house is valued at less than $200,000, whose office cost less than any other ex-president. There are some ex-presidents that are actually costing the American taxpayer more than $1 million a year just to maintain their office as an ex-president. And the last thing that I want to talk about as far as Publius Valerius Publicola, that when he died, this is something that I think is the most important thing. Now, remember that Livy was writing during the time of Augustus Caesar, and he's writing at a time when a lot of Roman politicians have used their offices to make themselves rich. So what Livy has to say here is aimed at all of these politicians who are using their offices for financial gain. He says here, in the consulship of Agrippa Menenius and P. Postumius, Publius Valerius died. Now remember, the Romans, to mark the year, they marked the year by who were the consuls that year, because other nations, you think about in the Old Testament, where it says in the 14th year of the reign of King Hezekiah or something like that, that they would measure it by the years of the reign of the king. Numbered years were an innovation that hadn't quite gotten there yet. So imagine having to think about, what year were you born? Oh, when these two guys were consuls. Was that before or after this year? But anyway, so Publius Valerius died is the important thing here. He was universally admitted to be first in the conduct of war and the arts of peace. But though he enjoyed such an immense reputation, his private fortune was so scanty that it could not defray the expenses of his funeral. They were met by the state. The matrons mourned for him as a second Brutus. And this really is aimed at everyone that is using their offices, using the public trust to make themselves rich. And Publius Valerius Publicola stands as an example of what the consulship could be, what the American presidency could be, just like Jimmy Carter gives us an example of what the American presidency could be, what kind of person could become president. Again, we can say what we want about long gas lines, about the hostage crisis, or whatever else happened during Jimmy Carter's presidency, but you can't say that the guy is not a good man and the guy is not setting an example of classical republicanism. Although he was a Democrat, but of course remember that the idea of republicanism transcends political parties. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and conclude this talk, but hopefully it won't be another 2 months before I'm back with another episode. Hopefully it'll be a lot sooner than that because I'm getting back into the school routine. I tell you what, I get lazy during the summer, don't we all, right? So anyway, if you like this, make sure to tell your friends about it and stay tuned because there will be more episodes coming up very soon. It's always a pleasure.